So the recording has started. Welcome to the Ontology Summit 2018. This is Wednesday, February 28th. And the session today is the first synthesis session. So the aim of the session is to identify open problems, issues in the topic of this year, context in context. And I should emphasize that we're trying something a little different this year. Instead of attempting to summarize the field, which wouldn't be very easy to do since it's a very broad one, but rather to identify what we feel are the major open problems, open issues in the field. So that's the emphasis of this meeting. So I would hope everyone would just make suggestions about open problems, and we'll try to collect them together and hopefully prioritize and organize them in a communique. So let's begin. Who would like to contribute to this session? Corey?
Well, Ken, if I may?
Yes.
One of the, how should I put it, issues, concerns, or gaps is a lack of qualification of whatever context is or may be or may not be. Now, some of the speakers have put forth some notions of qualification of this notion of context, and others have not. But it's that lack of a not necessarily consistent qualification, but any qualification. You know, what is it or what isn't it? I gather some, or I would think some of the speakers have hinted at some of the, what those qualifications might be, but they not, have not made them explicit. You know, is a context blue? Is it red? Is it heavy or something? What might those qualifications be as a starting point to understand what a context is or is not?
Are you looking for an ontology of context?
No. That's hoping for too much. Just a simple start to distinguish what a context may or may not be. I mean, we heard from Corey. I think he asserted that context is something that impacts interpretation. Okay, that's a pretty good qualification. I believe John Soa made some additional notions or suggested some additional qualifications, which I don't remember offhand. I happen to like the one about interpretation. That's very relevant, I think, for information systems and certainly for applied ontology.
So this is Corey.
Something we have from the site.
Corey?
Yeah, well, I did suggest that, a context is something that impacts the interpretation of or truth value of something else. And also a little bit more detail in the presentation where we define a relationship between propositions that are true within the context. For those things, the context contextualizes, so also defining the idea of a contextualization. It was stated probably accurately that that was a extremely general definition, but perhaps at least as a general definition, it's a starting point.
Gary, you have your hand up.
Gary, I pasted in something from our session, our page, I guess, the 2018 has a little bit of explicit context. Circumstances that form the setting of an event, statement, or idea, and in terms of which, whatever those things are, can be better understood or assessed. So it relates types of things to an understanding by a cognitive agent, which I think is a good starting point for us.
Well, isn't that similar to the notion of interpretation by that agent or an agent?
I'm just saying it's related to that. rather than saying similar, there is a relationship. But this definition also specifies the types of things, which an ontology is always interested in, that have a context that gets such an interpretation. So events, statements, or ideas. So we have the physical world and events happening there. We have some utterances about the world, and we have the conceptual world. So it's a little bit of the triangle of meaning. You take the triangle of meaning, and each aspect of the triangle, each vertex of the triangle has potential context. And altogether, the three things provide a context themselves, that statements about an event are based on ideas.
Jack Ring here, in the ISO standards world, they can't make up their mind whether to use the word context or the word environment. But what they're trying to signify is for a domain of interest or a field of discourse, what things outside of that domain or field influence or impinge upon that domain or field. So that the notion is to, in the systems world, is get the distinction between what something is and what other things are not part of that something, but simply interact with it or influence it.
Yeah. Didn't someone, one of the speakers, talk about context as a mediating entity or mediating relation?
Yeah, so that was me.
Oh, okay.
That's Corey.
Oh, and David, it's not John Soa's meaning triangle, but Peirce's triangle, which is actually spelled like Peirce, P-I-E-R-C-E or something.
It's worse than that. It's spelled P-E-I-R-C-E.
Oh, yeah,
so I have.
It's two sources of confusion, right?
This is why I'm not typing notes, among other reasons.
Right. If you look at, you know, a set of propositions that may be true, a set of things that may be hold for, then you can look at the context as mediating between those propositions and the things that it contextualizes.
I think Jack's point argues in favor of us distinguishing context and environment, where the context could be limited to what it influences an interpretation, whereas the environment could cover the rest. And there are other synonyms also for that. But context is helpfully narrowed to what supports the interpretation of a text. And then one can call on the field of hermeneutics if we want to get even more obtuse here, and say that the text and context work together to provide an interpretation. That actually does sort of operationalize this a little bit, so that it's not just, you know, everything that the world, the, you know, price of tea in China, whatever, unless it impacts an interpretation of a text.
Well, again, doesn't interpretation apply to agents also? Whether human agents or non-human agents, human agents are sensing some phenomenology, and they're doing something with that sensed information or data.
Right. So agents actually would need to be in the picture. It would be the interpretation by some agent, using some contextual information. So Jack was pointing out that environment I guess an environment can impact an agent whether they're aware of it or not. You know, something can fall on them. Mm-hmm. But a context is something that they perceive or remember or whatever, and they use it in their interpretation of a text.
This becomes important when we have two human beings who use the same word for different things or different words for the same thing. And so when we try and construct an ontology about some topic, some phenomenon, it turns out that it may work for one context, like human A, but it does not work for the other context, human B. And therefore, we're challenged to come up with some sort of ontological structure that harmonizes or somehow bridges those two human beings so that they can have a common effort. So a major difficulty we found in constructing ontologies is that the world provides us with more than 49 NIMs, synonyms, antonyms, homonyms, da-da-da-da-da. And so an ontology that one person finds suitable because that's the context of when you put another person there and change the context, then the ontology needs to have a lot more NIMs in it than the first one has.
But Jack, are you suggesting then the ontology is trying to accommodate all potential contexts?
Not the ontology. But what I am suggesting is that we will eventually create a set of, instead of an upper ontology, we'll eventually create a set of core ontologies for specific contexts, and then we will create some bridges across those various cores for a larger context.
So are context in your discussion right now different from the notion of a domain, in that an ontology is developed for a particular domain with specific uses in mind?
I believe in my usage, a domain is an instance of the notion context.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
That makes it very clear. Thank you.
But Gary has his hand up.
But we, our job then is to bridge domains, not simply build a context, build an ontology for that domain.
Yes. So I had my hand up because I have to leave a little early. I had a little note about that because I'm going to the Semantic Technology Symposium in Ohio, which starts tomorrow morning. I don't know if anybody else is going. So I have to leave a little earlier than usual. So I wanted to be able to infuse some thoughts into this. And so I put in a little text here at 12:21, which I'll read, and maybe we can discuss while I'm around at least. I think it, for a summit, it would be meaningful to discuss sort of at least two types of issues besides the never-ending discussion of what context is, to focus it on an external implication for ontologies. That is to say, if contexts are somewhat external to some existing ontologies, that is, they don't take a particular event into the full context or a way an agent understands it or discusses it, then what are the implications for existing ontologies that we have which haven't been contextualized adequately enough? And sort of the related issue is sort of the internal thing is, what if we are knowledge engineering and building ontologies going forward? How do we take context into account in that engineering sense? How do we build it in from the beginning if we recognize that a lot of our ontologies seem to be fragile and not taking in a range of context? Now, I think this type of discussion gets you into a discussion of microtheories, which we haven't been able to get a person to talk about yet, but I hope that I've got a person from PsyCorp who will do that for a next Open Knowledge Network session, but he's hard to reach and verify that he's still going to be talking about that. But the other thing I would say, and then I will let people respond, is that the ontology design patterns discussions that we've had in a series of sessions in past symposia are one way of sort of attacking or addressing some aspects of this contextual issue. Because if you remember, some of the patterns are built as a core around which you can have different alignments with different versions of things. So there is some degree of modularity and flexibility about how you build a building block and allow it to be contextualized and also connect to other building blocks. And so you build out from there in a flexible fashion. So I hope that at least those two things are addressed to some degree in our session, sessions going forward in our summit. I think there are related issues also of what types of tools will help us with this type of thing. If we take this into account, can existing tools help us sort of build larger context into the ontology we build? Okay, so with that said, I'm willing to listen to other ideas on that.
Excellent points. One thing that may help us get to the bottom of it, Derek Cabrera at Cornell has invented a little four-point model, distinctions, sets, relationships, and perspective. And the perspective aspect helps one understand that when more than one person looks at something, they see different things. So Derek's a little four-factor model might be useful.
I was going to suggest that we take a example of something I think that we all think we understand, which are namespaces, which I would suggest bind some term or identifier with some concept or element. And I would certainly think of those namespaces as context. And of course, they exist in computer science, computer namespaces, but also social namespaces, such as Social Security Administration defining Social Security numbers identifying people. And so if we can take those kinds of namespaces as examples of a kind of context, look at what they do in terms of this binding, and I think this applies to what Jack was describing in terms of the name collision problem. Then maybe we can identify the elements of namespaces and how they bind terms and the concepts, and that can help us at least identify some principles of this difficult to nail down term.
But Corey, whose concepts?
Well, whatever concepts are being bound to. I mean, the namespace, I think of an ontology, since the ontologies define namespaces, connect to the concepts being defined within that ontology. In the more physical space, like I said, it could bind to actual physical
physical things. I guess my question is, what is this binding? Using duct tape? Or some association created an information system, or another agent, a human, looking at that string of characters and, you know, interpreting it in some fashion?
Well, I think the binding is the association between the term and the thing it identifies. There may be, of course, representations of that in text, ontologies, pictures, or whatever. But the essential thing that I think that exists in the world is that connection made between the identifier and the identified, just as was talked about in the symbiotic triangle.
And
but if that binding isn't stated in some way, then there's no way to associate that term with that thing or concept.
So a binding is not an interpretation, or it's a special type of interpretation, or vice versa?
I would say that the binding provides a relationship, and the truth value of that relationship is established in the context.
Excuse me, the what value?
The truth value, and the assertion of that relationship. So the assertion of the relationship between you and your Social Security number is made by the Social Security Administration. So I think it's the assertion, the saying that this is true, that that Social Security number is bound to that person, or if you're in a programming block, that this variable is identified by this string of characters. So it's the assertion of it that provides that truth value.
And I suggest to you that context is not a thing. Context is a relation. It is exactly that binding that is the context. The Social Security number has a context of the person it applies to. It also has a context of what word and byte it is in some file somewhere. And it also has a context of whether or not it's been retired, et cetera, et cetera. So it, in fact, is the binding between any two instances that specifies the context of each instance.
So, Jack, I have a problem with that, because I think we are most effective when we're dealing with computers when we think of context as a set of relationships that are all applicable to the current proposition at hand or the current action set at hand.
Yeah.
If you try to just make it a single relationship, I think that you're losing some of the flexibility of being precise. And I think if you're going to do ontological engineering at all and you don't want to be precise, you might as well just play another sandbox because nobody else can understand what you're doing.
I agree with you because I didn't say it was a singular.
Well, you just said it was a relationship, which I interpreted.
And a relationship can be very robust.
I don't know how we lost. Excuse
me. We're kind of losing some focus here. Could we get back to the aim of the meeting, which is to identify open problems, identify research problems? So don't state it in terms of, this is what it should be. State it in terms of, here is a problem. Can someone solve this?
And the problem is that we are not capable of describing context to people other than ontologists.
Good. That's try to use that way of expressing, our issues.
Well, one problem I ran into when I was trying to describe the context of medical decision making is that there's so many different factors. Is the age relevant in this particular rule or not? Is the temperature that the blood pressure is taking, is that relevant or not? There's a lot of medical systems that allow for this idea of qualifiers on data, but a lot of them are limited to very small lists. Was the blood pressure taken standing up or laying down or sitting down? But other things that the people who were formalizing didn't think about aren't even available as a way of describing the context.
I wouldn't say that being able to describe context is the problem statement. It's more the solution statement. I think the problem statement is that our ontologies, our models, or even our data are not interpretable without information that's not directly contained in those resources. So to properly interpret them, you have to include externalized information.
I think that you just went back to your definition, which I think is very helpful, that context is what impacts an interpretation for an agent. And I think that in order to get this to span humans and machines and take it outside of the narrow machine ontology question, I think that's a very useful definition. If someone's making noise, I don't think it's me. So if the problem statement is we want to frame context in a way that sets it up to speak to humans and machines, then having context be whatever impacts the interpretation of a text for an agent is a very, it's both operational and general. I think it's a very useful starting point. Maybe we're not supposed to have come up with a solution at this point, but I don't think we need to search any farther to define context, because then we can address your next question, which is, what if the impact, you know, what if there are impacts that are not explicit or that are tacit or whatever? You know, then we can move on to those other questions.
Sorry, I muted some people because we were getting background noise, so you will need to unmute yourself.
I do try and mute myself when I'm not speaking. So maybe what we could do, as we not necessarily in this session, is just put on the table alternatives to that, or alternative refinements or suggestions, and see if we can make some get some resolution on those our general concept of context.
I think, we're not trying to resolve things here. We're trying to raise the issues. We're trying to find the problems. We've been doing pretty well at actually finding problems, finding issues. So we should just keep in that direction, keep expressing that. And relate it back to the people who have been speaking at the meetings. I mean, invited speakers would be very, we're invited, hopefully, to try to elicit these kinds of issues. So let's see. People are writing. Okay, so Todd has written a question. That's good.
I put several in there, Ken. You asked for some.
Todd, you're doing great.
Yeah, but some of the questions are kind of fuzzy, but it's a start.
That's okay. So John Sawa outlined some of these issues. So we can make use of that, of course.
Can you elaborate a little bit on what you saw as these competency questions? Could you elaborate a little bit on what you mean by
were you asking?
Competency questions were introduced by Gruninger and Fox back in 1992 or 93. And the goal was to effectively identify explicitly the types of questions you would expect a use of your ontology to be able to answer. Effectively, their requirements on an ontology that you are developing.
Yeah, so this is Gary. So I put that in originally because it's part of the ontological engineering or knowledge engineering practice. It defines scope in an objective way so that people can understand, oh, you weren't thinking of this situation when you were designing the ontology. Maybe I will, but it's clear that you couldn't answer this question because it's not part of your competency or the knowledge that the ontology will cover.
Does that answer your question?
Not really, because I was hoping that it had some kind of a way of elaborating the context, but from the way what I've heard is that it's part of defining the ontology, not the context of the ontology.
Well, no,
what is the connection between competency questions and context?
Well,
I mean, competency questions seem to presume a context already. So the competency questions aren't going to be meaningful if you don't already have an interpretation in mind.
Well, but as Gary pointed out, Ken, the context gives you some notion of scope. The scope, to some extent, is going to describe the domain in which the writer of the question feels that question is valid. So it's a fuzzy relation.
I think that would be a good example of a kind of an open problem, is how, you know, what these notions of context and competency questions need to be related to each other in a way, you know, more than they are now, which is basically just informally.
So I'll give you an example of an ontology design pattern we worked on recently, which is for drones, smart drones. And as part of that, you had to talk about things like guidance systems and how you react to certain things. And it was clear that what we were trying to do is talk about a type of vehicle that is moving around, which is not piloted by a human. And so, you know, essentially defining the scope of autonomous was important in that regard. Now, when you do that, of course, you're using certain modern ideas of what an autonomous agent is, and that will change over time because the agent becomes more intelligent. So essentially, there is an implied scope of intelligence or autonomy at a given period of time, but that may change over time.
Okay,
so
Gary.
What I'm hearing is
what's the research issue here? What is the research issue you're trying to?
What I am trying to say is that
Harry, you disappeared all of a sudden.
We might be able to define a range of situations and things that are beyond the scope of the ontology as part of our ontological engineering practice. So that might be a good thing to add. But it seems to me it's one place that we define a scoped idea.
Okay, good. Then you were kind of fading in and out, but
okay.
We should capture that in the chat. Do you want to put that in, Gary?
I'll try. Give me a few minutes.
Okay, great.
Gary's notion of an unmanned vehicle brings up the conundrum that's happening right now in IEEE and other standards on the notion of do no harm. When will these unmanned vehicles participate in fratricide? And it turns out, of course, that one person's view of harm is the opposite of another person's view. What if the vehicle attacks Joe? Is that harm? Well, I don't think so if Joe is attacking me. So the fundamental of the notion of harm is, as Pierce, I believe, really said it, we have signs and we have interpretants of those signs. And we have to be clear which interpretant our sign is pointing to, because that same sign will point to a different interpretant to some other human being.
Janet has her hand up. Janet?
I was just writing in the chat there, and that's good, very good, Jack, to bring in Peirce there. So what I wrote, questions of context need to be tied to interpretation events. So semiotic events that are actual concrete, they take time and energy and, they require channels and signaling and all of that. These are by agents who have some degree of intelligence or agency. It can cover humans and machines. It could even cover, animals or any other kind of, more than human agent. But it gives you an engineering framing that there has to be a signal event. It's perceived by an agent. It is interpreted, and then some kind of action is taken. So if you don't tie this whole discussion, ontologies and contexts and et cetera, to the presentation of signals to agents, you're just speaking very so abstractly that you can't get any traction on improving the engineering of how to control the information that is available, that kind of thing.
Janet, does the notion of interoperability cover some of what you were just suggesting needs to be addressed?
Interoperability then has a nice, clean framing where you can say, there's a signal event and it's received by these agents, in its in the sphere of it being broadcast or whatever, and they have different framings and response structures and ontologies or whatever, or they might be perceiving different things. It allows you to concretize everything and start operationalizing them, and then you can start doing engineering on it. I think that the whole question of ontology in machine, in AI work, and I was at Stanford in '89 and took a class with Lennart and Guha, and Tom Gruber was there, and I having come from a humanities background, thought it was interesting that they were focusing on ologies. Ontology, axiology, epistemology, teleology, but they didn't really learn the lessons from those fields. They, to some extent, just thought, I think it's very unfortunate that Tom Gruber's definition was picked up sort of superficially. I think the ability to do engineering on ontologies and contexts was sort of lost because there weren't clear, concrete, there wasn't a clear, concrete framing to begin with. It was a little too romantic. It was a little too, ontology is a little too mysterious of a term. So I'm sorry, I'm going in several directions at once here, but there is a very well-established field of hermeneutics, which is about interpretation of texts, and those are texts meant in a very broad sense of, it can be, a stoplight or a, something written or whatever. And so it would be good to draw on the framing of that field. Context is too romantic a term. That's interesting. But that's what I'm saying is that that if you tie text and context together, then that is, I don't think that's a romantic notion. It's, it's not vague. It's a, a text. Etymologically, it works well. Text is what is presented to you to your senses, and context is what goes with the text.
How does it go with the text?
Well, that's up to you. That's up to you to decide. It goes with the text through, you know, being perceived, being remembered, being, it's anything that goes with the text. So that now you get into the kinds of context, the kinds of things that go with the text.
Yeah, but didn't the creator of the text have some context when they developed it or wrote it?
They did, and that's a, you know, there's a whole big debate in hermeneutics and literary theory about is the intent of the author even relevant to interpreting a text? There's a school that says no, it's not. It's the only thing that matters is the context of the audience. Not the context, you know, unless you're trying to do engineering. If you're doing engineering for a purpose, then these questions would be more constrained rather than just, you know, open-ended.
Well, we are sort of talking about applied ontology, so I hope we have some notion of engineering floating around in there.
Could you tie your idea about signaling with a text, because I think of a single line of text as kind of like a signal, that signals are some way tied to time, but when you're talking about text, there's not really time, there's just the ordering of the text. You can mention in the seventh sentence something that actually existed before the first sentence was proof. Time does weird things in the text, bluntly.
Well, this, let me see, this would, a text is anything that is presented to your senses for interpretation. And so that is, you know, it can unfold over time or it can be, you know, at one moment. And actually, you know, what makes it a text is the fact that you're interpreting it. The question there about signaling events and semiotics and, you know, sign events, you know, what makes it a sign is the fact that you're interpreting it. And then there are lots of kinds of signs, and there are, you know, so text is only constrained by the fact that you're interpreting it, and context is only constrained by the fact that it is not in the text, but it influences your interpretation.
Isn't that also relevant to what you choose to interpret? So it seems like there's some interpretation event implied here, where you've chosen to interpret some set of things or believe some set of things.
I agree with you, Corey. If something occurs, perhaps in a separate language, or a separate formalism that you're not aware of, you're incapable of interpreting it other than that you just got some information that you weren't able to use.
Right, and that helps to do, you know, what Jack and I am involved in systems engineering. It helps to identify pathologies. How, you know, what are failure modes? There's, you know, failure to perceive the signal that was supposed to be interpreted. There's lack of willingness to interpret it, or there's, you know, incompatible background information, which forms context. You also want to tie the interpretation to completion of a successful action. So there we get back to, you know, completing a full circle of not just having a signal and having it interpreted, but having some kind of response and have a successful response.
And I'd like to point out that regarding Janet's text, that the whole idea of fog index became very, very important because a fog index of 20 of a doctoral dissertation is damn near indecipherable by a high school kid. So the notion of time, text as a signal, and the time dimension of that signal, the time is the effort and time it takes to unravel what the hell the person was trying to say.
So this is Gary. So I have to go in a couple of minutes. I inserted a few things into the text just in terms of what John Sower has said about this text versus context. But more recently, and I think maybe even more important to follow up on, is a link to some discussion we've had on the forum, because we seem to be having these discussions over and over again. And so there has been a discussion on the forum that I've linked to, I provide a link to, on sort of the, putting triples into contexts. You know, so we have triple relationships, and we need to have an array, larger relationships. And Pat Hayes had one discussion about adding sort of a time dimension as a context to a particular thing. And I put in the text he used, or his explanation of how that might take place, and it's there for your appreciation. But I think we should leverage something like that, because it's the simplest example of something that starts off with a triple, which doesn't take a lot of context into account, and we add the simplest possible thing for a physical object, which is a time dimension to it, or it could be a space dimension, of course, but a time dimension is very simple. And he goes through some of the issues of representing that. So I think as part of an ontology summit, we should be sure we have some opportunity to address some of those things as issues, and also pointing to some direction to solve this. In this case, it's a way of handling the limitations of triples by expanding them to a larger number of relationships and the implications of that.
Now, thanks, Gary.
Okay, and I'm sorry I have to go in a minute, okay?
Yes, sorry you have to leave, but I actually posted a comment in the Ontology Summit mailing list asking if anybody has, studied Paul Grice and his ideas from linguistics, from the point of view of context and ontology. He seemed to have some interesting ideas, but it's not clear whether they're directly applicable to what we're doing. So does anybody have any experience with that?
I don't know, but the point is that these are philosophical discussions which have a real role to play, but we really need to see somebody who made an application of it in the ontological sense. That would be really interesting to see that.
Well, yes.
I studied Grice back in the 80s there when I was interested in the AI questions. So the whole question of pragmatics in linguistics, I thought, did you initially write, who wrote the initial description of what was going to happen at the summit about context? There were mention of speech acts and things like that.
I think Ken started on
that.
I edited it, so I think I might have put speech acts in.
Right.
I wrote and Gary added a lot.
Yeah, and so that was very good, and it raised issues that we haven't really talked about. But yeah, so the conversational implicatures, the idea of that there are certain conventions that are contextual. The idea that we will stick to these conventions of only saying things that are relevant and perspicacious and that kind of thing is so important to our trust in each other that professor of mine pointed out that we used to lock people up if they couldn't speak according to the conventions. You know, that was the key sign of them being insane and untrustworthy. There's a lot of material on, dialogue, conversation theory, pragmatics, speech acts, Peirce, of course, Adolf Reinach on social acts, Habermas, how do we do things? Austin Searle, how do we complete successful actions with communications, speech acts or signaling acts of some kind, that all does need to be brought into the picture. it's a lot of material. it's a lot of difficult material, but if you don't bring it in, you're just going to be reinventing the wheel.
Yeah, so this is the kind of open problem, is to try to take advantage of this, you know, work that's been done, rather than having the ontology community reinventing all of this.
Yeah, that's a great framing.
I think that would be a way of expressing this as an open issue, open problem.
And it might be that the ontology community puts too much emphasis on engineering and ontology rather than conducting a dialogue of meaning.
Conducting a dialogue of meaning requires that you have common terminology and yet you agree on the way things should be framed.
Once you start to agree
on that, then you have a formalized system, then that requires engineering. It feels very easy talking about non-formal ontology as being something that can't be pinned down and then can't be reproduced.
We disagree, because I believe dialogue does not have to have the prerequisite that dialogue, in fact, is what creates the mutual ontology. And the reason we don't have these today is we don't do dialogue, we do engineering.
Try that, Jack.
Oh, excellent. Excellent example. A question. What do you mean by that? Now we can perhaps have a dialogue that will reveal the differences in our two ladders of inference. But for you to just throw at me an ontology and say, here, use this, the likelihood that I'm going to use it the same as you intend is very, very poor.
Well, wouldn't that depend on the extent to which the developer of the ontology made clear the context and expected uses of their work?
Provided they could name the 14 people that are going to read their material, yeah. But I think you're going to find that most of them can't. They have no idea who's going to be using their ontology for what purpose. I mean, they have their idea.
Isn't it incumbent upon them to make explicit, to the extent that they're capable of, the intended uses?
It depends on whether you want to do ontology engineering or ontology development. I would suggest to you that it is incumbent upon them. It is incumbent upon an author of an ontology to at least go out and determine the limits of utility of that ontology. To at least go out and exercise it with 3, 5, 7, 15, 40 people to discover the limits, the domain limits in which that ontology is true.
Wait, exercise it with people?
Yeah.
David?
I think people have a hard time obeying the rules of an ontology. If the ontology constrains the meaning in a certain way, I think Jack has consistently shown that he refuses to use somebody else's definition of ontology. And if we can't have that in his dialogue, when this is something that's a priority to him, then how are we going to have it in the case where you're throwing in 30 people that don't even agree to try to share the same meaning of the term? I see some confusion here that I think that you're reflecting, Todd.
Well, I think that's a very fair representation. So you take your choice of whether you're going to build an ontology for humans, or you're going to build an ontology that you can write in some programming language and have a computer tell you that you did good work.
But
where we are, because the 195 ontologies that have been published have had very little effect on improving society.
Okay, I'm still confused, Jack. First of all, you seem to suggest there's a difference between ontology engineering and ontology development. Now, it's certainly the case that there's a difference in people that do one or the other and perhaps not both. And then to the use of ontologies, my expectation is that most people or even other agents that might interact with an ontology are never going to actually see it. They're going to see some, shall we say, what would you say, image of it. And, of course, for humans, if that image is usually represented in terms of natural language terms, is not sufficiently consistent with their understanding, then things are not going to work well in your information system.
Isn't it the choice of any interpreter what they choose to include in their interpretation, ultimately?
Well,
I agree, but when you're looking about a computer interpreting something, just use an example in the hospital domain. What is a patient? If the computer doesn't agree with your use of the word patient, and the computer is effectively acting as an organizational memory, then you're the one who loses, not the organization, because the computer is already enforcing a certain viewpoint because it's built into the decisions that are automated.
But that computer isn't choosing, at least most of the computers today. We'll leave strong AI out of it. The developers of that software made the choices of what texts will be relevant to the interpretations made by that software. But a choice was made.
The choice was the computer is not choosing, as you say, the developers. But every time that the computer draws a conclusion based on definitions, it effectively is having the effect of a choice. Because that choice was not just made one time when the software developed. That choice is done every single time that conclusion is relevant. If somebody decided that there weren't any incidents of heart attacks before the year 1900, no matter how many times you want to put that data into the computer, for the computer to use it, it'll already limit the date you can put in so that you can't put in the date of a heart attack before 1900. So, you know, there are, yes, I failed in my use of the word choice and didn't say conclusion as actively being used, but it's still effectively. I'll be quiet and let somebody else.
I think a lot of this discussion gets back to Janet's point about the pragmatics and how one actually uses the context, how one uses the ontology.
You're coming
to a conclusion. You're doing something.
And so there's an active interpretation, and there's a perspective, which includes a certain number of texts, to use Janet's definition. And then conclusions are made based on those cumulative texts.
Right, and then some action is taken. Right.
But that act, the conclusion, has a specific time frame. And regardless of how you made the choice to include or not include a particular text, it may be justified or not. We certainly know there's a lot of unjustified text that are used for conclusion, but they're still used. So they're part of the context of that choice. So I think that this act of interpretation of the text does seem to be at the root of things.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting, this could be considered a research issue. Of
what would the question be, Ken?
The question is how context is related to the actual process, the actions that take place as a result of interpretation, rather than just you know, kind of abstractly speaking of context as being a means of determining what the interpretations are. I mean, it's, in other words, it's more than just, you know, kind of mathematically coming up with this entailment relation. You also need the whole process whereby you take actions as a result of the interpretation. I'm not clear how context relates to all of that at the moment.
Yeah. I think both of those are equally important. And once you have those together, then you can start tying things into one common framing. So the other question about how do we draw on these fields, like the philosophy of language and hermeneutics and literary theory. So the challenge is distilling the lessons and putting them into a good enough rough framework of how these components are tied together so that you have something to work with.
And that may be why I seem so strange, because to me, engineering is very clearly the selection and application of technologies to solve a real defined problem. But in the world we're in right now, we need to deal with the systems phenomenon. And engineering doesn't do that, because engineering doesn't go discover what the problem really is. So we need to do some system engineering, which concerned with what domain of interest are we trying to satisfy when we articulate an ontology. And that is a presumption on our part. And therefore, when we get our ontology articulated, we better go do some experimentation to determine what to what degree it really is effective for those who we intend to use it.
Well, that's where the competency questions would come in, if you've gone to the trouble to collect them in the first place.
That from the perspective of the consumer of the ontology, the things you're talking about are justifications for them to trust your ontology for their interpretation.
Yes, sir.
And that set of qualifying features are still essentially have to be interpreted themselves in order for whatever your work is to be included in their worldview.
Yes, it's
almost like marketing.
Yeah. Well, it's more like efficacy of determining whether or not this artifact we created is worth anything to anybody. And as I'm not well read, but as I looked at the hundreds of ontologies published, I've found no articles on the measurement of the efficacy of any one of those ontologies. And yet we have instance after instance of the pathology.
So what is the efficacy of a program
that we give it to them, that David, I can't seem to hear what you're saying. You're very muddy. David? There seems to be a problem with your microphone.
I don't know. I've been trying to use this earphone with the headphone with the microphone attached, and I'm not sure it's working well. So I'm holding it up to my mouth right now.
Okay,
the efficacy issue
the efficacy issue of an ontology seems in some way to be tied to what is the efficacy of a program itself. If you have a program that when asked for two numbers gives you back whether the blood pressure is valid or not, or if you give it two numbers and it says that's a reasonable sounding value for a blood pressure, is it efficacious or not?
Well, I guess I missed your point, David.
There may be a research question here. Is there a way of determining the efficacy of an ontology in various domains, in various contexts? Is there a way of making sense out of this? Can you evaluate ontologies?
Well, we talked about, didn't we talk about evaluating ontologies back in 2011, 2012? But I don't think we introduced the notion of efficacy.
Well, you didn't, and you evaluated ontologies relative to whether they'd execute in a computer.
No.
There was, but criteria. We didn't look at it from the point of view of ontology and context. And I don't think we actually talked about efficacy, you're right.
Yeah. Well, could we somehow tie or frame the question of efficacy of an ontology with respect to competency questions that we use to develop it? Did the competency questions provide sufficient criteria for the determination of efficacy?
Competency questions are necessary conditions. They're not sufficient.
Okay.
You'd need an infinite number of competency questions to be sufficient in general.
Just a program running as opposed to an ontology? Is an ontology different from a program, or is an ontology just a different way of formulating a program?
I think here the Gruber's early definition is helpful, or with the an ontology is a specification of a conceptualization, and then later, I guess, of the distinctions that an agent can make. Or so you have, and Nicola Guarino also discussed this, that you have the conceptualization, which one could say is the ontology, which is language independent, and then you have the specification of it, in a particular language. So the argument goes back and forth between, are we talking about the distinctions the agents make? Are we talking about our conceptualization of those distinctions? Or are we talking about the specification of our conceptualization of those distinctions, which again is sort of the triadic syntax, semantics, pragmatics question, which we haven't agreed on sufficiently to be able to clarify where we are.
And I think we need to clarify whether we believe an ontology is the map or the territory. And we need to agree on whether an ontology is Peirce's science or his interpretance.
I think it needs to be both. I think we need to be free to consider it as both.
It's helpful to talk about this in general, but we are talking here specifically about contexts now in this.
Right. Well, I was trying to answer David's question about specification. Does an ontology need
That's good, but let's get back to the aim of
trying to pull back in the concept of system or this context. I think Doug Linnet and whoever else worked on this context-based paper in PsyCorp was trying to talk about these different aspects of context so that these are ways that you can pin down your ontology where you may not, you know, given the fact that you need to pin it down, you may have too big of a space. But if you use the different dimensions that he mentioned, like geopolitical and so forth, then that gives you a way to pin things down, to specify them. And then after you've got them specified, then you've got a much better chance of seeing if they if they're efficacious, to use Jackson's. But I still think it has to be the specification that we're talking about. The ontology with a big O is what we'd ideally like to represent, but what we actually put down in the formal ontology is what a computer can actually use to further this point of view in a mechanical way.
So I've learned that.
Some of the people at the meeting haven't actually said anything yet. Just wanted to know if anyone needs a chance to speak.
So as a question, Terry Longstreth, what do you think about this?
Yeah, Terry. Harry, your hand is up, actually. Can you unmute?
I think I'm unmuted now.
Oh, great.
Okay. Yeah, I've been trying to think of things to write in the chat, and every time I get something started, it doesn't it's not germane anymore by the time the conversation gets to where I'm ready to submit. The first thing is context. We talk about context within context, but to me, context is more of a figure ground relationship, and as in art, it's almost impossible to describe a context as the background without understanding the foreground. So I'm not sure how we're advancing it by talking about context. Without recourse to the actual uses of the ontology, and we're getting, you know, you're talking about that a little bit. Todd's just put down the thing about the requirements for an ontology, perhaps supplying it. But the other thing is context. It's almost impossible to define a context as a static object, as an immutable concept, an immutable idea. It would be simple to have a schema that describes something about what you want to capture in your close. In other words, how you can close the world. But I think of context as being a part of the description of the open world environment that an ontology has to work within. So that's basically where I stand now. I don't know if that makes any sense to anyone else. I never got around to writing it down.
There's still time to type, Terry.
Yeah, thanks, Terry. Thanks. Yeah, anyone else want to chime in? Alex? I guess he's – Bobbin is here.
Just a few words.
Alex, you're unmuted, yes?
Yeah. You see, for me to build ontology, and I need not saw word as context at all, because there are a lot of meaning of this word. And for me, ontology is something like next to database. I mean, it's simple. And then I just enjoy your discussion.
We like to amuse.
It's very interesting.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else? We just have a few more minutes.
I was going to say, in relation to what Terry said, that there is context which can be explicated context which can't be. If the text is explicit, and the context is implicit, then within the implicit, there's the explicable and the tacit or not explicable. I think that is a good point. That's well established. If something is made explicit, then it becomes text. Then it's a companion text, which then also has its own new context, which is not explicated.
Okay, we have a couple more minutes.
So Ken,
anyone want to have some closing comments?
If context can't be used as part of making decisions or drawing conclusions by a formal ontology, then is it relevant to formal ontology? I think the only context that only when context can be explicated, is it relevant, and only in when it's relevant can it be used as part of making a decision. There's lots of extra information about a text that you may not think is relevant to this particular use of the ontology or to this particular interpretation, as we said otherwise. And if it's not relevant or if it's not having a bearing, then does that really use it? Is it really context, or is it just various things that are not associated with your matter at hand?
It depends on if you're talking about a machine ontology, a machine agent, and the machine's context, or implicit context, or human beings, or maybe a robot that has a continual updating of a sense of their environment. Even in a program, it has context, constraints on it, physical constraints on it, and that are built into the situation, which, as someone, was it Matthew West who was talking earlier about the, people rely on context because we don't want to have to explicate everything. So we rely on the fact that, in an anticipated context, we can take certain things, whether it's a machine or a robot or a person, we take certain things as infrastructure. That's another important word, is we can rely on them being there. And we know that they will be available to supplement an interpretation. So not everything is made explicit. Some context is anticipated as infrastructure, and it can be relied on. But then there are also pathologies or, various different ways that things can go wrong.
Any other closing comments?
Goodbye.
Okay, so I'll stop recording.
I'd like to.